it's amazing to me that nobody thought to ask, at least I haven't heard them ask, what are the health reasons that public health would provide free pipes to people who smoke meth and crack? Is it, as Anthony Fury is suggesting, to continue having people on drugs and not give them help? Or is there actually another health benefit to clean pipes? That is on the way. Also, John Right or Wrong is back. But first, it's the draft.
It's News Talk tonight on the iHeartRadio Talk Network. Here's your host, Jim Richards.
Every week here on a Tuesday night, we get two of our favorite people together to do a draft. It's like a sports draft, folks, meaning there are first round draft picks and you're allowed to pick five for, in tonight's case, a playlist, which are best car songs for a road trip. The song that gets every single person excited about a road trip because you keep that car a-rockin'. And here to play with us tonight on the draft are two contestants, are Bill King, writer, broadcaster, musician, and also curator of music festivals. What is going on? Tell me a little bit about Acapella Week in Toronto, Bill.
Acapella Week, as part of what we call the Sing International, the Toronto International Vocal Arts Festival. And it started yesterday. It's May 29th to 24th. It's at the concert hall, and it's all about acapella music in every form. And there's a proclamation out yesterday where the city is celebrating Acapella Week, and this is what it will be from now on. So everybody from Naturally 7 to every kind of voice is there, but it's without instruments.
That's pretty cool. Where can people get tickets?
At singtoronto.com.
SingToronto.com. That's pretty neat.
Yes.
And Eric Alper is a writer, broadcaster, musician, and photographer, and you need to check him out on Twitter, that Eric Alper. What is exciting in your life these days, Eric?
Well, it turned out that I'm a musician and a photographer, two things I'm not very good at. But other than that, you know, a lot of chores. You know, I'm sure that Bill can agree the last couple of years have been absolutely horrible for musicians and the touring industry and the music industry in general, due to COVID. And now it seems like touring is back up and running. There's a lot of great live music out there, including the Sing Festival. And just working on a lot of stuff going on for the summer.
You are a publicist. I'm so sorry about that. Music commentator and shameless idealist.
My wife just said, "What? You've got more jobs now? Yeah. I'm leaving for sure."
No, that's you. My apologies, Eric. Thank you very much for your time. Tony, who won the coin toss off the air to have the first overall pick?
Oh, coin toss went to Eric Alper.
Eric Alper, yes. Exciting times. We might not know who the hell you are, but you do have the number one draft pick overall. And
that's
who are you going with, Eric?
I am going with a song that the Metro Toronto Police has actually never said this, but they should. If you have this song in your car during a road trip, you might be going 10 kilometers over the speed limit. It's Running Down a Dream by Tom Petty.
Trees went back. Me and Del were singing. A little runaway. I was flying. Yeah, running down a dream.
I can hear the whole car singing along right now, Running Down a Dream, Tom Petty. Is that one of your favorite go-tos when you get in the car?
That's actually not just my all-time favorite driving song, but that's the first song on my playlist whenever I decide that I'm stupid enough to try and do a marathon.
Oh, is that right? That's funny. Are you both of you guys who make playlists for long trips?
I'm mostly it's just kind of listening to news talk.
Such a perfect answer. All right, after I messed up his title, that he's kissing up. I'm the one who's supposed to be kissing up here, Eric. Let's go to Bill King. Bill King, what's your number one overall pick?
So, I thought about a place in the middle of nowhere. So let me just read you this. If you see a faded sign by the side of the road that's 15 miles to the Love Shack, I'm heading down the Atlanta Highway looking for the love getaway. Heading for the love getaway, I got me a car. It's as big as a whale, and we're heading down to the Love Shack.
It's a fun song. This was almost like a comeback for them, wasn't it, Bill?
Yes, it was, too. But it's, you know, it's one of those things, if you're going to get in the car, a song's got to have some bounce to it.
Yeah.
You
know? There's Love Shack by the B-52s, giving them a second breath in their career. That's the number one overall song by Bill King as we're doing road trip car songs. All right, Eric Alper, you are on the clock. What is your second overall pick?
My second overall pick was actually the first song that Bruce Springsteen wrote for the studio, meaning that he wrote it to go on record rather than performing it live. And when Bruce played this song for the very first time on May the 9th, 1974, when he opened up for Bonnie Raitt, the writer John Landau, who ended up becoming his manager later on, wrote, "I have seen the rock and roll's future, and his name is Bruce Springsteen." And it's because Bruce Springsteen performed Born to Run for the first time to the live audience. We wrecked the mansions of glory and suicide machines sprung from cages on high.
That song growing up, because so often I think all of our friends hear Bob Mackiewicz when he hosted the 6 o'clock Rock Report. He would kick off the weekend by playing that song at like 5 to 7 each and every Friday. So good memories, and yeah, it's a real good driving and road trip song. Okay, second pick overall, Bill, you're on the clock. What is your second overall pick?
Okay, now, you can't get in the car and go somewhere with your loved one, the person you travel with, because if it's a woman, it's about dance music. So I could have chose Don't Stop the Music from Rihanna, Uptown Funk, Dancing Queen, I Want to Dance with Somebody, Whitney Houston, but I went with Boogie Wonderland. My lady loves it.
I mean, when I was younger, I don't think I appreciated Earth, Wind, and Fire as great as they are, because they were a fantastic and maybe one of the most underrated bands ever, or by people who love them, maybe properly rated, Bill.
I would say this, Boogie Wonderland and September, two songs you can put on anytime and you go, these are amazing tracks.
Yeah.
And it always feels good when you put them on, you know? You feel great.
Eric Alper is with us, as is Bill King. This is the Draft Road Trip Edition here on the iHeart Talk Radio Network with rounds 3 through 5 next here on News Talk Tonight. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to News Talk Tonight with Jim Richards on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
We're back here on News Talk Tonight, and we are featuring the draft tonight with best road trip songs. We have two people who are drafting sports styles back and forth, trying to put the best team and or playlist together, and we're into the third round, if you will. We're joined by Eric Alper, who is a Canadian music correspondent, a publicist, and lifelong musicaholic, and also a Bill King writer, broadcaster, musician, photographer, and also happy to be a part of Acapella Week. One more time on where people can get tickets, Bill.
SingToronto.com. You're going to love this.
All right. Yeah, it does sound like a lot of fun. Okay. We're into the third round. And if people are just joining us, best car road trip songs, first overall for Bill King was Love Shack. And he followed that up with Boogie Wonderland. Into the third round for Eric Alper, his first song was Running Down a Dream, followed by Born to Run. And it means that Eric Alper is on the clock for the third round. Who are you picking here, Eric?
Well, this band, Golden Earring, was founded in 1961, but when they kind of broke through in 1974 with Radar Love, for a lot of people that heard this song, they had no idea that the band had been around for that long. And in fact, there's a line in the song that says, the radio's playing some forgotten song, Brenda Lee's Coming On Strong. And a lot of people didn't even know that Brenda Lee had a song called Coming On Strong back then. So I'm going to go for my third pick with Golden Earring from Radar Love.
I had no idea that reference meant that. And that would be the Golden Earring Orchestra, Golden Earring with Radar Love. That's the third overall pick on car slash road trip songs from Team Eric Alper. Let's go to Bill King with his third overall pick. Bill, you are on the clock.
Okay, Christine, my wife Christine and I have driven across the Southwest many times.
Yep.
And one of the things, when you're on a road trip, say if you're single on a road trip, you stop in a roadside bar. Well, this was called Dick the Chicken. And this is where people meet somebody on the trip and some magic happens.
That's the Dixie Chicken by Little Feat, who have one of the best album titles, I think, of all time. What is it? Feats Don't Fail Me Now?
That's right.
Yeah.
Isn't it great?
Yeah, it is. It's a great album, and also the name's a lot of fun. Okay, so that's the third round. Radar Love from Eric Alper, Bill King with Little Feat's Dixie Chicken. Let's get into the fourth overall round. You're on the clock. Eric, what is your fourth overall song?
My fourth overall song was a song that in total, this song took about 40% of the time spent on the band's Joshua Tree album. The band, of course, is U2. And when they recorded Where the Streets Have No Name, it was so complex and such a mind-bending experience that the producer, Brian Eno, almost threw out the entire track before it was finished. He was so frustrated with it, but it turned out to be a masterpiece. And by the way, one of the greatest opening tracks of any album ever. It's Where the Streets Have No Name by U2.
Go the fourth overall pick for Eric Alper, Where the Streets Have No Name from U2. That makes it Bill King's fourth overall pick. Bill, what is your fourth overall pick?
Well, this came out originally with Marvin Gaye and Kim Weston in 1966. But if you're a couple traveling any distance whatsoever, you better play this song. This is Tina Turner and Rod Stewart. It Takes Two.
There you go. That's It Takes Two from Tina Turner and Rod Stewart. I think we got Eric Alper's take on the passing of Tina Turner. I don't think we heard from you, Bill. You must have been especially saddened by that passing.
Yes, and Eric did an amazing job on covering that too. I heard it on the air. It was fantastic. I just think that her passing, to me, I wrote a piece that's coming out at FYI Music News on Thursday, and it's about the greatest generation, which I refer to as pop music. So like Whitney and Aretha and Celine Dion and all of these were the great voices.
Yeah.
I think with Tina gone, we're losing all the great voices, and I don't think we'll ever have a generation like that again.
Yeah.
And I didn't think she would ever die. She's immortal to me, you know?
It's just an amazing story on so many fronts in that life. Okay,
yeah.
Fifth and final round here. Let's go quickly through them one more time before we get to the final picks. Let's talk about Eric Alper's selection as you're going to vote on your favorite playlist at 7-10-10. Eric started with Running Down a Dream from Tom Petty. That was followed by Born to Run by Bruce Springsteen. Then it was Radar Love by Golden Earring. And the fourth pick was Where the Streets Have No Name from U2. So here we are with the fifth and final pick for Eric Alper's Best Road Trip Car Songs. Eric, you're on the clock. What is your fifth overall song?
Well, this one goes out to all the Canadians that are going to be taking a road trip out there. It's Life is a Highway by Tom Cochrane. And if you go to Manitoba, you can actually drive on a section of highway called Tom Cochrane's Life is a Highway. It starts in his hometown of Lynn Lake, Manitoba, and it ends in Thompson, Manitoba. So go on, have fun this summer. Here's Life is a Highway by Tom Cochrane.
So there you go. Life is a Highway by Tom Cochrane, the fifth overall road trip car song from Eric Alper. Let's reset for you from Bill King. You had a Love Shack from the B-52s. And that was followed by Boogie Wonderland by Earth, Wind & Fire. Then it was Dixie Chicken by Little Feat. Tina Turner and Rod Stewart, It Takes Two. And that'll be followed by what song at your fifth overall pick, Bill?
I think some music from Jamaica. If I'm in the car, I love reggae. So I got to have some funky Kingston with Toots and the Make Tales. Roots and boots. Bootsy Collins, too.
Bootsy Collins, yeah.
Isn't that good?
That's so fun. Yeah, I was listening to it when we were recording it earlier. Hey, great playlist by both of you guys. Thank you very much for being good sports. Always appreciate it. People can vote at 7-10-10 on whose playlist is their favorite. Bill King and Eric Alper, thank you very much for your time. And have a great night.
Thanks so much for having me. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you, Eric.
Straight ahead, why would there be free crack pipes or meth pipes given out by a city? Is there a health reason? That's next on the iHeartTalk Radio Network.
This is News Talk Tonight with Jim Richards on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Taxpayers would be alarmed to hear just what's really going on with the drug culture being pushed by City Hall. Not only are there plans to create more injection sites throughout the city, but a whistleblower has provided me with City of Toronto branded crystal meth pipe kits and crack pipes. So your
It's insane. I'm sorry. It's too insane. It really is. Like, let's go through this if we can for a second. And I actually like Anthony Fury. I'm not sure I like all of his policies, but he's a really nice guy. And I'm sure he means, well, I don't know what he means, because I'm not sure that he's not intentionally misleading people when he says the beginning part.
Taxpayers would be alarmed to hear just what's really going on with the drug culture being pushed by City Hall.
Does anybody think that they're providing these pipes for people who smoke meth and or crack, that they're encouraging and that's like, oh, well, we want more crack smokers?
No.
Or do you think there might be something behind it? Do you think there is like a health initiative? Because maybe if people share pipes, there could be a problem. But the other thing that I think is really funny is that he's like, a whistleblower, let me know. It's been something the city has been doing for like 15 years. And is on their website. How do you call that something that the whistleblower has let you know? Like, somebody is going to get fired if their name gets out. Can you imagine? Don't tell anybody I told you about something that's been on a website for 15 years because I don't want to get fired. That's not a whistleblower. That's a guy who's got the internet, is what that is. And so just the idea that this city or any city in this country for providing pipes is like, oh, yeah. It's like he's saying, like, oh, yeah, we want more people to smoke this stuff. Anyway, we thought we would get the real reason why a community would do this with somebody who actually works with street health community. He's a street health community nurse, and he's been doing it for a while, harm reduction. He's also an activist when it comes to harm reduction. Pete Bachman joins us right now. Pete, thank you very much for your time.
Hey, thanks for having me. This was like the funniest part of my day, watching that video.
When you woke up and you saw that somebody is like, aha, I've discovered something, and it's like, I don't know, what did you discover? The chocolate is tasty? What were your thoughts? I mean, almost kind of, I don't want to say weaponizing something, but clearly people in the city, you know, are concerned about maybe some legitimate things, and that might be syringes left in parks, but to kind of hijack that and scare people like this city wants people to do crack.
Well, I mean, like, that's always like the narrative they try to push whenever there's like available supplies, like harm reduction supplies for people. And they're always going to, like, you know, blow it up. I think that right now, particularly, like, there's a lot of people coming out of the woodwork that are, like, very anti-harm reduction. Like, I know that Pierre Polyever is just making up complete nonsense. But, and this guy, honestly, that whole thing killed me, like, watching it. Like, I don't know what kind of a whistleblower he's talking about, but, like, do you mean, like, drug user that just gave you a bag, or did you walk into the works?
Yeah.
And to grab one, you know what I mean? Like, this isn't an uncommon thing. And, like, I worry for him.
If I walked into where you work, are people like, hey, hide those kids. There's somebody walking in right now. They're going to blow our secret. Do you have to sign an NDA about any of these things that you give out these harm reduction kits, these pipes? I'm kidding.
It's mind blowing. And it's not like it's new either. Actually, crack kits were like the beginning of the harm reductive supplies that we would distribute. And this has been going on, I believe, since the late 90s. Don't quote me on that, but I know that quite a few friends of mine were part of that movement, and crack was the first one that they tried to hit, because obviously that was the first major drug epidemic, right?
So when people argue about harm reduction and specifically needle exchanges, I guess, you know, you can maybe talk some sense into them by saying, hey, so you're in favor of people, getting HIV or hepatitis, you're in favor of that. And the fact that it would be more expensive to take care of them in the healthcare system than just providing a needle. But I have to plead ignorant to not knowing the dangers of sharing a pipe. What are the dangers if I was sharing a pipe with somebody?
Basically everything you just said. Rarely HIV, but hep C is a big thing. If like somebody has, it's blood to blood contact, right? Like you're not going to get hep C through sex, but say like the pipes, like you've burnt yourself. Like crack is a pretty addictive substance, right? So they're going to be smoking that, might burn them, might hit their lips. Like there's a lot of ways that you can pass. Like if you're snorting with the tubes, you can, that's blood to blood, anything. And it's like, it's, I worry about this guy. Like, has this guy ever seen a rig, out of curiosity? like has he seen a needle?
Yeah.
Just
I don't know. I'm guessing probably not. Because of this and this aha eureka moment, how many more people do you think in the city of Toronto are going to be smoking meth or crack because of they know that there are free pipes?
I'm going to say not too many.
Like
the majority of the people that come in to get a crack pipe or a meth bulb, they are already smoking crack or meth. So I don't know if like the availability of these supplies have increased the amount of usage, but it certainly made it a bit safer. And I don't see any problem with it. And the guy talks about it like, you know, like they're like laser etched city of Toronto. And another thing is like, this guy's running for mayor, correct?
Yep.
Yeah. So I think it's a good idea, like if you're running for mayor, maybe just to do your homework and figure out what like the municipal government actually is in charge of dealing with. Like this
you don't
has
think
nothing
it's a good
to
idea
with...
to just scare misinformed people?
Well, I mean, like that's what, you know, people do. They like to scare misinformed people. What I'm saying is, though, it's like he can't do that. He can't just be like, no, we're not distributing these life-saving supplies anymore because ultimately, like, I'm the mayor and I can do whatever. It's like, this is actually coming from a provincial and a federal level.
Yeah.
You know, this is the Ministry of Health that it's like,
the mayor can't touch that even if he wanted to, is what you're saying.
I mean, they might be able to take off like the City of Toronto logo, but there's only one place that does this, and it is directly funded by the city. Well, like,
but
half funded.
The logo's on the bag. It's not on the. Is it on the actual pipe?
No. Yeah. I think that would be awesome, mind you. Yeah. I would love like a souvenir crack pipe.
It's like a bag that has the City of Toronto logo on it, and he makes it sound like it's some sort of designer pipe that we're giving exclusively to, hey, if you do crack now, you'll get a designer pipe from the City of Toronto, but act now, it's a limited offer.
I've
the other argument I was wondering to get your take on is this, hey, we're headed to be, I don't know, as bad as Seattle or Vancouver, and it's these programs
nonsense
that are adding to that. Do you see these programs adding to that?
Like, no, I don't know if like anybody's ever been to the States and like tried to access any sort of safe supply or not safe supply, but like just harm reduction in general. I was in New York recently and a friend of mine was looking for like clean needles. And a lot of these places like Rite Aid, they have this program called Rapid Access. You can't get stuff like that freely in the States. It's nearly impossible, and you have to pay for it like at a head shop. And that's why like they have a lot of problems in the States with like, you know, contaminated supplies just like hurting people, literally hurting people.
Thank you, sorry I'm out of time. Thank you for your insight, Pete. It's been eye-opening, hopefully, for a lot of people listening.
Yeah Thank you for having me.
Pete Buchanan, who is a street health community nurse and also harm reduction advocate.
stay in your car, in the driveway. Radio show, Jim Richards on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
True it is, and thank you very much for your time. It is now time for Right or Wrong. That is when we're joined by the talents of John Wright, who's the Executive Vice President of Maru Public Opinion, for some of the things that are affecting us on a daily basis in our community, or just some cool numbers that we can marinate in. But today we're going to talk about the workplace and when people will want to retire, if they ever can. Very good point, John. How you doing?
I'm great tonight. What a great day it was today.
Oh, so beautiful. Yeah, it was so beautiful. As are you. Let's take a look at the numbers today. Can you paint the picture of what we're talking about with the workplace?
Yeah, a brand new set of numbers. It's just a snippet of a big study that one of my colleagues did, and it's on talking to people who are employed. So these are workers across the country, and asking them some questions about their jobs and about retirement and a series of other things. I think we got to get to the last section of this because I think it's going to be the most interesting. So I'm going to begin by asking you the first question. You ready?
Yep.
43% of Canadian workers find their job intellectually challenging. 43% find their job intellectually challenging, right or wrong?
I'm going to say right.
I'm going to say wrong. 32%. Whoa. So 32. One third. Yeah. But what's interesting to me is in the regions, the people who are least likely to find their job intellectually challenging live in Ontario, Atlantic Canada, and in British Columbia. The people who find it most challenging are in Alberta and Quebec. 41% in both of those places.
Interesting.
So it's very big.
Do we dig deep and find out why that might be, or is it?
No.
No? Okay.
Not tonight. Got no time.
All
Sorry.
Right. Okay. No, intellectually challenging across the nation, 32%. All right.
All right. So if we do intellectually challenging, then we'll go to the next one. Right or wrong, 40% of Canadian workers are enthusiastic about their job. 40%, right or wrong, are enthusiastic about their job.
I don't know. I think the first number would correlate with the second question, so I'm going to say... I'm going to say that's wrong.
I'm going to say that's right. And I'm going to say it's 40% tonight.
Oh, man.
But what's interesting again is where workers are the most enthusiastic and where they aren't. But enthusiasm comes the most in Quebec. 48% are enthusiastic. Alberta, 44%. And the Maritimes, 43%. So then we said, how many people, just straight up, do you like your job? Do you like your job? Yes or no? Like no equivocation on this one. Right or wrong? 63% of Canadians like their job. Right or wrong?
I'm going to say that's right.
I'm going to say it's wrong. That's 3 for 3 so far. 85%. Yeah, well, you know what? You scored last week. You were just on fire last week. So you're cooling off. 85% on asked yes or no. Do you like your job? 85% of people across this country said that they did.
I'm happy to hear that, but I mean, I'm sure everybody is, but that's good to know. I think I just assumed that a lot of people were stuck in positions where they couldn't really do what they liked, but that's a great number.
Well, but you know what? There's another, as I said, this is a big study, and I'd like to return to it maybe in the next week or the week after, because there's a whole series of things that we tested about what's going on in the workplace. So while they may say, look, I like my job, there's a lot of things in the workplace that they're not so keen about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the interaction that, have you ever been passed over for a promotion you actually thought you deserved? Well, okay, there's about a quarter of workers who believe that. You know, have they ever had to deal with a really caustic kind of email from somebody that they weren't expecting? Yeah, almost about the same. So there's conditions around it, but you might like your job, but you're distracted by some of those other things. Now, the question really comes about retirement. And you know, we have a growing and aging population. We actually have a lot of workers now who may be older, and I don't get corporations. I kind of go in and say, look, you've been here for 30 years. You've got this big salary, so we just shoot you in the head. They lose all that intellectual knowledge, all the institutional stuff, when they could have gone to somebody and said, look, do you want to take a pay cut in $60,000 and stay? You know, and somebody probably would have said yes.
Yeah.
But here's what you get. So How many people do you think say, when asked the question, what age do you expect to retire? They say never. So is it 28% of Canadians say that they will never retire? Right or wrong? 28% right or wrong?
I'm going to say that's right.
You got that one. 28%. It's astounding.
Wow.
It's astounding because you look right across the board, and Atlantic Canada is kind of interesting. Now, we asked the question, I'll just give this to you. We asked the question, when do you think you'll retire? And then you get to put in your own number, right? The average retirement projection for people is 60.5 years of age. Now, if you go up to the boomers who are still working, they actually think that they're going to be around 66 by the time they retire. But if you go out to the Maritimes, it's a really interesting thing. 36% of people who are working in the Maritimes say that they don't think they'll ever retire, but they have the youngest age of retirement. They think that they're going to retire at about 57 years of age.
Wow, good
so
for
we've
them.
Got this. The people who are actually most likely to say they're going to have to work forever, the Gen Zs. Aged 18 to 26, those people who can't buy the house, who are seeing, you know, the way they are right now in their own lives, those are the people who are least likely to think that they're going to retire.
We have one of them as our technical director right now who just, I think, is faking crying. So, yeah.
Well, is he a Gen Z or is he a millennial?
He is 18. When did he turn 19?
October.
Okay. He's an 18-year-old technical savant.
Well, here's what I would say to that, as I would say to my children. And then is by the year 2036, it's not that far away, the entire boomer population is kind of going to shuffle off its mortal coil. Yeah. So just before that, they'll be selling their homes. All of a sudden, there'll be a flood of real estate under the market. And guess what? You'll pick it up for a song.
Yeah. Even though you won't have a job because you've been replaced by AI. Yeah, but
well, no, he'll be looking after elderly people. Come on, there'll always be a job for them.
Yes, that's true. That is true. Those are some interesting and maybe some concerning numbers there.
Well, you know what? We'll come back next week with some different ones, maybe in the workplace or maybe about the economy, some things like that. Nowadays, it's a really different atmosphere out there. I always think that while we went into the COVID, not knowing what we were expecting, I think we're dealing with what I would call the reckoning right now. I think there's so many conditions and issues going on, whether it be workplace or the economy or other things, that we're just kind of, we're still responding to what happened in COVID. We're not through this yet. And I think that's deeply concerning for Canadians right now.
Yeah, I would agree with that. John, always appreciate your time on a Tuesday night for John Right or Wrong. Thank you very much for your time.
Always a pleasure. Have a great evening.
You too. John Wright, Executive Vice President of Maru Public Opinion, with a snapshot about how people are feeling about their jobs in 2023. All right. Coming up after the news here, we've got David Cooper, who's standing by in about 20 minutes time. Also, Slow News Day is back tonight. And more of your phone calls. I'm Jim Richards. This is the iHeartTalk Radio Network.